Hello everybody, this is Joel's Easter message for Sunday the 9th of April. The reading is taken from John chapter 20 verses 1 to 18. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and said, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him." So Peter and the other disciple started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but did not go in. Then Simon Peter came along behind him and went straight into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, also went inside. He saw and believed. They still did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. Then the disciples went back to where they were staying. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white, seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They have taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they have put him." At this she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize that it was Jesus. He asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it you are looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you had carried him away, tell me where you have put him and I will get him." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord," and she told them that he had said these things to her. Christ is alive. What an extraordinary privilege for us to believe it and to be able to affirm it, whatever the times we live in and whatever the course of history. These three words express the whole basis of our faith. The Apostle Paul does not hesitate to write to the Church of Corinth that if Christ had not risen, our faith would be completely meaningless, and the preaching of the gospel too. If his resurrection was only a huge deception, we would indeed be the most unhappy of men. The four evangelists in the New Testament each recount some of the facets of this absolutely unique event in history. Their accounts are different and complementary. It is especially visible in the account of the resurrection, and it is therefore on the text of John that we want to stop this morning. John, who describes in particular the attitude of two disciples and of Mary of Magdala. But first, a note on what John does not describe. In the diversity of the four Gospels, there is one thing which is common to them and which deserves to be noted. It is the total silence on the event itself of the return of Jesus to life. Matthew does tell us that an earthquake took place and that an angel came down from heaven to roll away the stone. But that is all. This moment when the Father gives life to the Son, this moment when the miracle of miracles takes place in the heart of divine intimacy, God does not describe it to us because it cannot be translated into words. We must accept that even the apostles did not receive the revelation of such an intense and sublime moment. This is not accessible to us, and we are called to believe without penetrating all the mysteries. We are still living in the time of incompleteness, and there are many realities which remain absolutely ineffable. The Apostle Paul did not hesitate to point out his limits when he speaks of the special revelation that God granted him and which enabled him to hear things. Things that no one is permitted to tell. 2 Corinthians 12:4. I believe that this can only fill us with immense hope for the day when we will finally see clearly. But what happened that Easter morning in Jerusalem before the open tomb? The Bible tells us about it and in detail, but it does it very simply. Despite the dimension of the event, the gospel story is nothing short of a fantastical and dazzling tale. The sobriety, the examination of the biblical revelation contrasts decidedly with the way that men of today have to process information. John's story is also very personal and, I believe, particularly touching. Three people are mentioned here among those who came to the tomb: Peter and the other disciple. It is Peter and John, of course. These two men come to the tomb because they have been alerted by Mary, who has just announced to them, all out of breath and surely in the greatest disarray, that the body of Jesus had disappeared. To the incredible affront of such an unjust condemnation, one would have added that of stealing the body of the deceased and thus removing it from the last gestures of affection of those who had become his true family. And the two disciples want to get to the bottom of it, and their haste, their race to get to the tomb, is only the clear sign of the ardent love they have for their master and their friend. Jesus loved his disciples, and he proved it to them in many ways. But they too became deeply attached to him, and they could not bring themselves to accept such a tragic end. And now they are no more prepared for such a rebound of events. They should have been. They should have known and remembered. Jesus had, however, warned them of everything that would happen. But the text explains it well here. They had not yet understood. And it is with their incomprehension, their slowness to believe, but with all the fire of their love, that they run towards the tomb that morning. Peter and John, men who do not yet have all the discernment and all the faith that befits true witnesses, but who in any case express their fidelity and their passion. This Lord, even if they abandoned him when he was arrested, they love him with all their might. But it is clear that Peter and John were men like us, with their fragility and their hesitations. And from there to realizing that Jesus is very much alive, there is a step of faith that still seems beyond their reach. They have in front of them irrefutable proof. The strips that surrounded the body and the shroud are there. So there can be no question of an abduction. But these disciples remain in amazement, and they will leave with their questions. This is what verse 10 tells us. They returned home. They won't be looking for him anymore, it seems. He was there, their Lord, perhaps a few steps away, but they will not see him and they will not hear his voice. It is Jesus who will meet them. He himself will go to join them where they are, the same evening in their locked house, a house where they will be reunited almost completely, only Thomas is absent, and where they will have locked themselves away with their doubts and their fears. And there Jesus will reveal himself, reconnect with them and bless them. In the same way, God reveals himself to each of us, but he also allows time for our questions and our perplexities to make their way. He knows how to wait for us. He knows how to respect the slowness of our steps and the limits of our understanding, but he never forgets to join us. And the third person on whom John stops in this story is, of course, Mary Magdalene, or Mary of Magdala. I say the third in the order of our meditation, but it is actually the first in more ways than one. She came early in the morning with two others, the other gospel tells us that, bringing the perfumes, the herbs that they had prepared. Mary had attended with her companions at the burial of Jesus, and they had decided to wait until the end of the Sabbath to embalm his body. Wondering along the way, who could help them roll away the stone? Mary is the first on the scene that day, and she is the last to want to leave, while the two disciples, Peter and John, return fairly quickly, perhaps for fear of being seen. She does not leave the tomb. Mary remains there, very close, and there is nothing that matters to her other than knowing where Jesus is. And Mary, in her sadness and incomprehension, cries. She does not stop questioning and waiting, and the answer will surpass by far her expectation. she is going to have, in private, just for her, the first face-to-face meeting with the risen Lord. If God leaves time for our questions, our doubts, and our slow journeys, he also knows how to respond to our perseverance, to our love and our desire to see clearly. He hears our sighs, he sees our tears, and he can go far beyond our prayers. Mary did not need to go far to find him. He was there. He was the one who approached her and re-established the dialogue. And what will open Mary's eyes wide in tears is to hear her name pronounced by the Lord, Mary. Jesus died and he conquered death. History is definitely marked by his immense love for all humanity. But it is to Mary alone that the privilege of finding him in all intimacy belongs. If Jesus says to Mary, touch me not or hold me not, it is to make her understand that she and the disciples have entered a new era. Mary must accept that a big step has been taken. He will no longer be present with them in the same way. And she receives a new mission. And what a mission! She will be the very first witness to the resurrection. And Jesus' last words to Mary that morning are inexhaustible, an inexhaustible source of hope that spans the centuries. Go find my brothers and tell them that I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. The work accomplished on the cross sealed for eternity our status as children of God. We benefit from the same love and the same fidelity that he showed to Mary and all his disciples. He welcomes us too with our doubts, our groping searches, with our tears and our why, until the day when, as he had already promised to the disciples, we will have our place in the Father's house. The last four words of the Lord Mary wonderfully confirm this promise that we will be at home forever at his home in the Father's house. With such hope, it is up to us to commit ourselves also to our role of witnesses, so that many more will discover that he is alive and that he is coming. Amen.